we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart. Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph, read by Peter Donaldson. Driveways in Cannock in Staffordshire dissolved in rain after cowboy contractors used broken mints instead of white stone chippings. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Tony Banks, MP. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. And before we start round one, here's a correction from the Belfast newsletter.
We wish to apologise for yesterday's article, which resulted in Sir Patrick Mayhew being referred to as Sir Patrick Mayhem.
Thanks to everyone who sent that in. Andy, who wants a party but doesn't want it to be social?
Is this a Tony Blair question?
It is.
And I'm very lucky to have a Labour MP sitting next to me who knows all the ins and outs of...
Not a socialist, then?
No. No, we know about that because of the trip to Argentina, Tony, don't we? Yes, this is Kim Howells.
Yes.
He said that he thinks that the word socialism is outdated and he doesn't really think it should be used anymore. He thinks it should be phased out along with the words discussion, debate. These are all old-fashioned words. And it's caused a flutter of concern, but I noticed that John Prescott managed to use the word socialism 49 times in a speech yesterday, and that was just one sentence. So, so I think the conference is going to consist entirely of people shouting socialism and Tony Blair just shouting the word challenge back at them. I think it was...
I don't know why we don't go the whole hog and float the Labour Party on the stock exchange, you know. Why have creeping capitalism? Then, you know, we can see the share price go up as the opinion polls go up.
You
know,
I don't think you should be the Labour Party.
Have an AGM.
I don't think... I mean, all this new stuff... you shouldn't be the Labour Party anymore. You should be the middle management party. And go the whole hog.
Right.
There you are. We just reformed the Labour Party in 30 seconds.
Why call it a party? Why not call it a few people round to dinner?
Yeah.
Howells has a reputation for thinking the unthinkable and speaking the unspeakable, which sits well in the party with a reputation for electing the unelectable. John Prescott did use the word socialist four times in one speech. Tony Blair said he didn't mind him using it, but he wished he'd remembered to say champagne in front of it. 2 points to Andy. Tony, who promised to drop taxes from a great moral height?
That sounds... Well, it could be Tony Blair or it could be John Major, but can we tell the difference? Satire's not dead, you know, but yeah. Unfortunately, I am in the Labour Party. I really don't know, actually. Because I was fact-finding, I must have missed that, but I think both of them have been talking about dropping taxes. Probably... John Mallott for John Major.
Yes, he made... I mean...
Was it?
Yeah, like, you know, like any normal person, I spent the day glued to the text of John Major's speech. What he said, they probably didn't cover it in Argentina.
No.
What John Major said was that actually getting taxes down was a moral imperative and that that it was a very moral thing to do. That's basically what he said. That was the gist of it. But there was lots of most satisfactories around it, obviously, but that was it.
He's obviously been listening to the Moral Maze on Radio 4 and learnt how to close right-wing bigotry and moral philosophy.
Mm. I think
it's
he is the
programme, The Moral Maze. You get Janet Daly says something, and then for the same point of view expressed in a slightly more demented way, you get Professor David Starkey.
I think John Major is the Moral Maze, isn't he? There's no way out. That's the Frank.
John Major attempted to claim the moral high ground for the Tory party after 17 years of sex scandals, financial misdemeanours and parliamentary malpractice. Good to see he's not lost his sense of humour. Mr. Major feels sure he'll win support for his moral crusade, especially from the church, just as soon as he can find a bishop. Jeremy, your question. Who wants teachers taught how to teach?
This refers to education. It's interesting. And it's a question about the week's news, and I'm supposed to put a humorous spin on it. That's the game. Have you noticed that this week that junkie doctor was in the news again? You know the junkie doctor, the man who's the architect of the government's health reforms, who then revealed that he was out of his mind on drugs at the time? So I wonder how long it will be before Chris Woodhead reveals that he's actually an idiot. The other interesting thing about Chris Woodhead is that he cuts his hair into exactly the shape of a judge's wig. It must be some fetish that he has, but his pupil, Gillian Shepherd, wants to change education. She decided to stop attacking teachers and start attacking teachers' teachers. And she wants to introduce the national curriculum in teacher training colleges because it's worked marvellously well in schools. And the trouble is that newly qualified teachers enter the classroom unprepared. They think they're going to be teaching children, whereas actually they've got to fill in lots of paperwork for Ofsted. And this is all going to be done using phonics, because what they reckon is... They actually reckon that the English language is phonetic, because the letter A, as we know, always makes the sound A, except when it makes the sound A, or A, or O, or A, or O. And the sound F is always made by the letter F, except in phonics, when it's made by PH, or in enough, where it's made by GH. Because O-U-G-H always makes the sound UF, except when it's in trough, or although... So we need to teach children to speak phonetically.
I don't think he knows the answer to that.
Education Secretary Gillian Shepherd announced a new initiative to train teachers how to teach better the three essential disciplines, English and maths. Alan, a piece of music for you. Alan, who was a Roman Catholic?
This is Queen's Bishop in Knight's Move, isn't it? Yeah. This is the Bishop of Argyll, who actually, as of our recording date, has also turns out to have a 15-year-old son. And a woman rang the BBC and I said, I've got this son in the attic. No one's claimed him for 15 years, but I believe he's looking remarkably like the Bishop of Argyll. He's had various affairs and things. He's now chucked in his mitre, as it were. Hung up his crook. Or rather, taken it somewhere else. And it's a terribly sad story. It's about the death of Roman Catholicism. I want to say Douglas Hume, but it isn't. It's Cardinal Hume, isn't it? The idea of Douglas Hume saying, Cardinal Hume came on and said, we may have to revise celibacy. Because I'm the only celibate man in the universe, and I'm getting sick and tired of sitting here on the Todd. And all these others are out there with their cassocks riding up. Going like the clappers. And we'll change it soon. Because it's not too late, I'm only 73. A bit of tread left on me from the old days. I don't think I've offended anybody by that.
It's been quite an interesting story historically, because I didn't realise that, first of all, that, it had to be pointed out to me that nowhere in the Bible does it say thou shalt walk around feeling very frustrated and randy and in a bad mood. St. Peter was married, apparently. He was the first pope married to Mrs. St. Peter, I suppose. And it was the early popes who forbade the priests from sleeping with women, presumably so there'd be more for the Pope. I don't know. I mean, I imagine that's how it worked, because they all went in for quite a lot of that, didn't they, in those days?
Well, at the end of round one, the scores are everybody 4 points. We start round two with an item spotted in the Daily Telegraph.
Mr. Lucic welcomed the review of police force policy on brothels, saying that the Federation did not want our members exposed to this situation.
Thanks to the many people who sent that in. Andy, where did the burgers ensure a burger-free zone?
Oh, right. Can I have my lawyer present before I answer this question? This is a question about Michael Portillo. Is it the audience are sniggering already because I don't know why? And he, you know, like any good conservative, he got together with his conservative association. He said, we've got these conservative association offices here. Let's flog them to McDonald's and make a bit of money. And basically they wanted to turn it into a one of those drive-in places. I don't know whether Mr. Portillo goes to drive-in sort of places. I'm not sure. The Labour councillors, I think the Labour council have rejected planning permission, so it'll have to stay as the Conservative Association, where lots of young men in bow ties hang out and play table tennis.
McDonald's failed to secure planning permission for an outlet on the site of Michael Portillo's constituency headquarters. The council accused it of being greasy, unwholesome and lowering the tone, but eventually decided McDonald's might be just as bad. The hamburger companies were furious at the unexpected reverse. They were so confident of taking over the Tory HQ, they'd already booked The Exorcist. Tony, who put No Yorkie Bar on Psychic Revelations?
Yeah, this is my favourite member of the royal family, or now ex-member of the royal family. Fergie, Duchess of York, went to see a Greek faith healer.
Vasso,
thank you, Vasso. Vasso, I thought we were back to Michael Portillo there. Vasso, yes, and because he has great faith in the future. And I don't see why we should laugh at this poor woman, Fergie, because, I mean, who wouldn't go to talk to a faith healer who sits under a blue perspex pyramid in her parlour and heals? I mean, it seems a perfectly reasonable thing to do. And I like Fergie anyway, because, I mean, there's all these people going around making Republican speeches such as myself and getting nowhere. I mean, she comes along, I mean, she whips her bra off, sticks her toes into the mouth of a balding Texan financier, and the tumbrils start rolling and everyone starts discussing Republicanism. I think she's great. I think she's wonderful. And I think we should all feel very sorry for her and Mrs. Vasso.
It's the book that promises to list details of all the sexual exploits of the Duchess of York, published in 36 leather-bound volumes. It's written by Vasso Cortesis, Fergie's Greek mystic healer. The Duchess is prevented by her royal settlement from publishing royal revelations herself, and she's never been much of a writer. But she did once get her hands on a column in The Sun, and we all saw the pictures to prove it. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, how is Ron preaching from the sky?
Ron who? Be specific, man. It's all very well to say Ron. Oh, Ron, Elron.
Elron,
Elron,
yes.
To do Elron, Ron, Hubbard. Blimey. Elron, Ron, Hubbard. Wrote stories and also invented Scientology. At some point in the 50s or 60s, he thought, what the world needs now is another religion. Because there hasn't been an act of massive slaughter inspired by religious fervour for 3 or 4 weeks. He invented Scientology, which is a religion for extremely rich film stars to belong to. And they don't believe in God. They believe that everyone has a soul, so they obviously know nothing about Michael Howard. But the weird thing is, all the people slagging off Scientology this week have been people from other religions, which I find fascinating, really, because if you believe that women can be made pregnant by angels, or that an eight-day-old baby boy deserves to have his winkle trimmed. You're not really in a position to call anybody else bonkers, in my opinion.
I was nearly a victim of the Scientologists. I have to tell, I can confess about this now. Many years ago, I was doing a show with the Old Vic Youth Theatre, and for an outing, we went in the West End, and all these kids, we were walking down Tottenham Court Road, and in those days, their sign said, free personality testing. And all the kids wanted to go in, and these were quite sussed South London kids. And we went in, and this vacuous American woman handed out these forms. And the first question was, if you see a beautiful young child, do you stop and smile, or do you walk on by? And one of the kids put her hand up and said, I don't understand this. So this American woman came over and sort of smiled at her and said, perfectly simple. She said, if you see a beautiful child, do you stop and smile, or do you walk on by? And the kid said, well, why can't I walk and keep smiling? And we got thrown out after that.
Lucy First did adverts for L. Ron Hubbard's Church of Scientology, which are to be screened on Sky Television. The church is known as a quasi-religious group with questionable ideas and a mysterious leader, which explains why they chose Sky TV to advertise on. Alan, who wanted to make a killing with Ugandan activities?
This is the last days of Wilson. In the bunker.
Yes, he had Alzheimer's too, didn't
saying,
he?
Saying, why don't we open the drains and flood Idi Amin? He's an extremely balmy man. Wilson, supreme statesman and diplomat, as Tony, I'm sure, would assure us, had a foreign policy for Africa. I thought, best foreign policy for Africa was to kill Africans that got up his nose. And Idi Amin looked at a very good possibility. They rang the Foreign Office and said, can we go round and top him? And they said, because they're diplomats, no, we haven't got anybody who can do that kind of thing. I think it's true, he'd actually been talking, I'm not sure whether it was Kissinger or Kissinger's predecessor, but they planned to blow up Castro by giving him an exploding cigar, this wonderful Christmas present. Imagine a certain amount of naive turn. Oh, great, and blow his head off. And Wilson wanted to import food that would poison Idi Amin. As Idi Amin had been a cannibal for about 3 years by this point, there's not much he could do. Sending around Harold Macmillan's leg, I suppose. Interfered with, it was strychnine on the knee, but it didn't work out. And the Foreign Office simply told him that it wasn't a very good idea because they didn't have that kind of agent. He'd been reading too many books.
I suppose you could have done it if you wanted to poison him by sending over some diplomats. You know, with sort of like packets of cyanide in their insides, you know, wrapped up in Durex and things, because you can do that and it doesn't sort of go out into the digestive system. When Idi Amin had ate them, he'd get it, wouldn't he? I was thinking about that because I was wondering how they were going to poison him, you see.
If you were eating your Sunday joint, you came up on a condom full of... This looks like the best bit, would you?
That's why I'm a vegetarian, but I mean, you know...
That's the only reason why you're a vegetarian.
can you think of a better
mad condom disease? At least you're protected, aren't you?
I think we have to face it, Tony, that I don't think you're one of nature's assassins.
No, you're right. Too nice.
I think that...
You're right.
The news that back in the 70s, Labour Prime Minister Harold Wilson planned to assassinate the murderous dictator of Uganda, Idi Amin. The whole story is almost impossible to imagine now. A Labour Prime Minister? Scores at the end of round two are, everybody, 8 points. We start round three with a cutting from the Bournemouth Evening Echo.
A young mother, Diane Longman, gave birth to her son in her bedroom after being sent home from a hospital who told her she wasn't in labour. A hospital spokesman said they'd be launching an internal investigation.
Thank you, Marion Barnett, for that.
New labour, new danger, one thing.
Andy, which old mistress gave old masters the brush off?
This would be about art. Will it?
Yes.
Yeah. Tony's been in Argentina this week and I've been very busy. Yeah. Oh! Is this a story that Mrs. Thatcher, I think it was that she particularly didn't like the paintings of herself, is that right?
No. No, she liked those.
Oh.
She didn't like the ones that showed all the gore.
So what did she do?
Well, she had them all removed because she didn't like seeing all this suffering and all this gore on canvas when she could have the real thing.
Ah. That's the story. That'll be the story then. It would be that she got rid of a lot of the, presumably, you know, classic paintings from Chequers, and she put up pictures of her and Dennis and Carol and that other monstrosity. And,
Yes, the story referred to revelations that Margaret Thatcher was upset by hideous paintings at Chequers and would often have to cheer herself up by studying the unemployment figures. She particularly objected to pictures which featured dead pheasants, injured lions, and a dead sheep. She thought the first two were gruesome, and the third was Geoffrey Howe. According to insiders at the time, she much preferred paintings of panoramic landscapes and would spend hours staring at them, wondering where to run the motorway. Tony, some music for you.
Oh, he's fat, poor, crazy, he's fat, poor man, and the fat boy had just robbed him all the wee bit since he hadn't. It would take a dozen skivvies, his place to wash and scrub, since Sir Job became a member of that terrible fat boy club.
Which crazy gang put the boot into a jellyfish?
Well, I'm a Chelsea supporter and so is Andy, so yes. We know a bit about this, don't we?
We do.
Apparently, Gary Lineker, he of the Walker's Crisps advertisements and the sticky out ears, he said that Vinnie, who I like and who is a personal mate of mine, and that's true and you can believe me, that Vinnie was a disgrace to football and he was a self-hyped personality. Whereupon Vinny and the whole Wimbledon team sent Gary a little letter saying that he was like a jellyfish, with all the charisma of a jellyfish, and they pulled his tentacles off. Now, this is true, because it appears this little spat started when Vinny had thrown a piece of toast at Gary Lineker in a hotel in Dublin. Well, what I subsequently found out that the toast was still in the toaster, which is probably why Gary was so upset. So it's 3 points to Wimbledon and none to Gary Lineker.
I wonder how long it takes 11 Wimbledon players to spell charisma.
Jeremy, who made exceedingly good kicks?
I don't know. What?
Two people. Trolley
Rage. This was only in the Mail and the Telegraph.
Right.
Was it in another one?
Everything.
Huh?
Everything.
Was it in Everything?
I read it in Figaro.
it's a crap opera. I always take a paper. Here's another one, lady. I only read it in those two because that's what I've realised about the news quiz. People say, how do you know all the answers? And the key to it is only read the Mail and the Telegraph. At the end of 12 weeks, you will know all the answers on the news quiz. The trouble is that you will also think that P.W. Botha was a great man and that left-handed people are responsible for moral decline. But, Trolley Rage, yeah, a bloke in the supermarket pulled out from the pot noodles without indicating and smashed into somebody else and got beaten up by a security guard. This was a security guard, lost his rag and beat the hell out of this place. Presumably the security guard just felt left out because he was the only one in the security firm without a conviction for GBH and thought he needed to get one. So, that's it.
It was a case of Trolley Rage. Two shoppers rammed each other and one was punched and kicked before being carried to the 9 stitches or less checkout. Punched in the face by Lawrence Cotton, Joseph Wilkinson started to wobble uncontrollably until he realised he was still holding onto his trolley. He then fell into a Mr. Kipling display and Cotton kicked him in the cake section. Luckily, he hadn't fallen into the plums. 2 points there. Alan, what campfire story rings true?
Oh, right. Boy Scouts are now equipped. Given the sexual mores of our time, with cell phones. I suppose they rub together to produce badges. And you can now get a communications badge in the Scout with a little cell phone on it. And they now have a ceremony in actually telephoning and listening. Oh, not a ceremony, they have a course in how to use a cell phone and what to do when it squeaks and what to do.
But isn't
for
it
old ladies on the wrong side of the road, if they've got a cell phone, they can ring the Scout and say, would you mind getting over here? There's a truck coming. And they do that.
But isn't the badge in public relations? So when the Scoutmaster gets into a bit of difficulty and finds himself on the front page of the News of the World, they can trot out the leader of the Bull Patrol with his, with his prepared statement, saying that that Woggles.
Public relations. He sells the Scoutmaster to the leader of the world. This is the Max Clifford badge with the crossed oak leaves.
Yes, it's possible for Boy Scouts now to earn a badge in public relations. It depicts a mobile phone. Next time you're sitting around the campfire and you hear dib, 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 it's just the fax machine starting up. Mixing scouting and media hype has brought many problems. One lad spent half an hour rubbing two sticks together only to find out they were Jodie Kidd and Kate Moss. Before we reveal the final thrilling scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, I've got something from the Loughborough Herald and Post, sent in by David Johnson of Loughborough, and it's a very proud statistic. The mainline train service in Loughborough is the most reliable in the country, according to new figures. The Midland Main Line, which links the town with London and Sheffield, ran 99.4% of advertised trains, and about 0% were on time.
Tony.
This is from the Doctor magazine of the 29th of August, and it's been sent in by a doctor, Dr. Jane Smiley. So a doctor writes, baffled doctors at the Pelonomi Hospital in Free State, South Africa, have finally solved the riddle of a death wish bed. They could not figure out why several successive occupants of the bed died for no obvious reason, and always on a Friday morning. The answer came when doctors realised that an over-enthusiastic cleaner was unplugging vital life support equipment. You're a very sympathetic audience, aren't you? In favour of her floor polishing machine. The job done and the protestations of dying patients drowned out by her equipment. The cleaner dutifully replaced the plug and went on her way.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by Pat Daly of Bristol, and it's from The Times. Undaunted by nose-diving circulation figures, ever-optimistic ideas men at the Sunday Express are now planning to produce their flagging organ not once but twice a week.
Alan.
Well, I spotted this moving little story in Wednesday's Daily Telegraph, Simon. It says, Kenneth Waters of Wolverhampton, a father of five who receives £9,000 a year in benefits, claiming agoraphobia makes it impossible for him to leave home, is to have his entitlements reviewed after falling off a roof during a burglary.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores, which are, everybody, 12 points. And before we leave you, here's a story from The Big Issue.
A thief in Miami was discovered in flagrante delicto with an inflatable porpoise. Stig Butterwing, 26, had broken into a sex fantasy shop late one night intending to rob the till. Once inside, however, he'd become mesmerized by the shop's display of sexual appliances. I'm not a pervert, he stressed. I just wanted to see what it felt to be like one. Mr. Butterwing is now in prison, where he's studying for a diploma in marine conservation.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Tony Banks and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith. The producer was Alan Evans.